Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
The New York State Legislature finished up work on the budget this week in the early morning hours Monday, just making the budget deadline of April 1st. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the spending plan represents a compromise where not everyone is completely happy.
Senate Print 1503D, an act making appropriation for the support of government aid to localities' budget.
The $175.5 billion spending plan includes more money for schools, though not quite as much as the legislature had hoped for. There'll be a $620 million increase in what's known as foundation aid, with a larger percentage directed to poorer schools. The budget also restores $550 million to Medicaid programs. To help pay for those items, new taxes will be imposed on internet sales and prescription opioid drugs. 2 to 3 upstate prisons will be closed, the locations to be determined later. The temporary 2% per year property tax cap will be made permanent. New York will also be among the first states to ban single-use plastic bags. Senator Todd Kominsky, the sponsor of the measure, spoke on the Senate floor.
The bill would ban plastic bags because plastic's really bad for the environment. There are billions of plastic bags that are non-biodegradable that end up in our atmosphere, inside marine animals, in the ocean, on our beaches, in on our streets.
Counties will have the option of also charging a 5 cents per bag fee on paper bags. If the counties opt in, they can keep some of the money, but they would have to provide bags for free to low-income residents. The budget will also include criminal justice reforms with a partial end to cash bail for misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies. It would also change the discovery rule so that defendants can find out earlier what evidence a prosecutor might have against them. And the law will now guarantee a speedy trial for defendants, with misdemeanors to be resolved in 90 days and felonies within 180 days. Khalil Cumberbatch is a former inmate who now works at the Fortune Society. It's a group that helps former prisoners re-enter society. He was pardoned by Cuomo for a robbery he committed when he was a teenager. He says the changes will make a difference in many people's lives.
Oh, it's going to be huge. I mean, it's going to be huge for people not only themselves directly impacted in the criminal, caught up in the criminal justice system, but it's going to mean a huge amount to their families and also to New York. I mean, you know, New York, just like many states across the country, waste a high level of taxpayer dollars to invest into a system that is just not delivering the outcomes that most New Yorkers are under the impression of and that all New Yorkers are requiring.
To help fix New York City's mass transit system, the nation's first congestion pricing plan will be implemented in parts of Manhattan. And there'll be a new tax known as the Mansion Tax on the sale of luxury homes worth $25 million or more, as well as an additional real estate transfer tax on luxury homes. The budget also creates a commission to study whether New York should adopt a public finance system for statewide elections. Governor Cuomo had pushed the issue, and Democrats who lead the Senate were receptive, but Assembly Democrats had reservations. Government reform advocates, including Lawrence Norden of NYU's Brennan Center, says that falls short.
I don't see the need for a study commission on this. I can understand saying we all agree we need a multiple match public financing system to address the problems with big money dominating Albany politics. But there are some details that we have to work out, and we don't have time to do that, so the commission will do that. But at this point, I think some kind of study commission would really be a lost opportunity and a failure.
Some items did not in the end make it into the state budget, including a proposal to legalize recreational marijuana for adults. Governor Cuomo says there were still too many unresolved issues to finalize a deal in time.
In concept, we have agreement. But that is all about the devil is in the details.
Cuomo says he hopes to resolve that and many other items in the second half of the legislative session. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, sort of de rigueur, the state legislature passed its budget in the dink and the dank, the middle of the night, into Monday morning, just in time for the April 1st deadline.
Described it as an historic agreement. The budget makes, among other things, the state's 2% property tax cap permanent, several criminal justice reform members, including the elimination of cash bail, and makes reforms to and raises revenues for the MTA, including congestion pricing.
Well, the New York District Attorneys Association, David Soares, has been very critical of some of these criminal justice reforms. And the implementation, of course, will go forward until something bad happens. We know that this has happened in the past. You make a mistake, somebody comes out, they kill somebody or something like that, and then you see what the reaction is going to be among the public. There's no way out of it. On the other hand, it is also true that cash bail has been a loser for many reasons. It's not fair. You know, people who have money, people who tend to be more Caucasian and less black, tend to be able to buy their way out of jail. Whereas people who don't have any money, and we know what those statistics look like, have been very punitive. So as an attempt to get it right, but a lot can go wrong here. Now, as far as the rest of the budget is concerned, I've been fascinated by the ongoing sniping between the Senate Democrats, who have just recently taken control of that house, and the governor. The governor has won round one decisively in that the Amazon deal went down. The Senate Democrats have been held responsible for that, and now this is going on. Reminds me sort of David of the hockey game where the guys beat each other's heads with sticks, but when they walk out with their arms around each other. It seems to me that the one thing that really predicted that this budget was going to be on time, sorry, folks, was the fact that they weren't going to get their pay raise if it wasn't on time. It had much less to do with philosophy than pocketbooks.
Speaking of pocketbooks, the issue of public campaign finance reform.
Yeah, right.
And the idea that we've now thrown another issue to a commission.
Well, sure. And we know where the blame for this one goes. It goes right to the Assembly and therefore to the head of the Assembly, Speaker Hastie. Look, when the Republicans were in control in the Senate, they sure weren't going to go to public finance of elections. And so the Assembly could say, we're all for it. But when push came to shove, they weren't for it. What do you think that spells? How do you spell hypocrisy anyway? I'm not too good at that word.
Finally, when it comes to the environment, we now have a plastic bag ban and a 5-cent fee on paper bags.
Well, that's good. I mean, we have had it in Great Barrington, Massachusetts for quite a while. It takes some getting used to. It's not fun. The paper bags they often give you, we pay a dime here, are never good enough. They tend to break. And people will have to bring their own bags in with them. That's always a difficult thing to remember. But yes, when it comes to the health of the earth and the fish dying and the whales ingesting all this plastic and everything else, it's time to make some real changes.
Ellen, you were with, once again, Governor Andrew Cuomo during the roundtable program. Let's start with the budget, when he described it as historic, one of the best, if not the best, budget that's been done. You remarked, what about the Assembly Speaker, Carl Hastie, who said, for this budget, New Yorkers should hold their nose?
Well, it does go to show you, David, that the priorities of the Assembly, which is primarily New York City, and the governor, who has to worry about the whole state, are very different. Speaker Hastie, you know, has a number of constituencies to satisfy. You have a governor who knows how to negotiate better than anybody. These other folks aren't really used to this governor's style, which is very, very strong. And, you know, he got pretty much what he wanted, and the speaker wasn't happy about some of it. Nevertheless, one has to just chalk that up to the fact that the governor got what he wanted and the speaker didn't. And the speaker and Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is the new head of the Senate, who is a woman, which is great. It's wonderful to see two men and at least one woman in the room, had to negotiate that budget. But the Senate Democrats have now had a lesson from this governor about not taking him on. For example, the whole thing about Amazon was pretty well laid at the Senate door for having screwed it all up. And so I think what you're seeing is an emerging idea that if the governor wasn't going to have the Republicans, which he apparently liked to have, slowing things down, he was going to have to teach the new senators a lesson, and that he did. Now, are there any specifics that you wanted to talk about, David?
Well, one of them was the motivation, and you pointed out that most or part at least of that motivation to get that budget on time was the pay raise, which they will get. One of the other things that's in the budget is the governor's own raise, which will make him the highest paid governor by, I believe, 2021 or 22.
Well, yes, that's true. And as you know, during the negotiations, the legislature desperately wanted that raise. There's all kinds of talk about who won on substantive issues, but I have believed from day one that that was what was going to motivate an on-time budget, and I think I was right. In the end, their own pockets became paramount in how this is going to get done. Now, that's not to say a good deal of good substantive legislation hasn't been passed, but I'm telling you, I just smell it. I know it's the money that really counted. Now, as far as the governor is concerned, what was not so hotsy-totsy about that one was that that didn't get done until the last minute. Frankly, I don't think it's too much money. You know, you're governor of one of the biggest states in the country with all of the complexities, and you take a look at what CEOs of major corporations are making, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars. I don't think that's that much money.
One of the things that made news, Alan, wasn't what was in the New York State budget, but what hadn't made the New York State budget, which seemed at one point to be fast-tracked. That's the legalization of marijuana. Governor Andrew Cuomo seemed primarily to want it to help fill the budget gap, but the complexities of the legislation led them to put it aside. And yesterday, you asked him about it. He said, we will get marijuana done. It's not a question of desire. It's a question of practical reality. And they very well could get it done by June, the end of session.
Well, they could. I gave him a hard time about that because a year ago he was telling me that marijuana was not to his liking for a number of reasons. One of them was that it was an entry drug for other drugs, and he came around, he changed his mind, and he came out swinging. So I asked him whether or not, you know, he really, really wanted it, and he said yes, he did. But somehow, this governor, who got almost everything he wanted in this budget, didn't get marijuana, which he says was denied to him. And I'm not so sure that he really wanted it the way that he says he wanted it.
By the way, what about New York being poised to become the ninth state to raise the legal age for buying cigarettes from 18 to 21? Critics say it's unfair to individuals who can vote, serve in the military, or even be elected to the state legislature.
All true. On the other hand, somebody's life is going to get saved because of this. Every kind of emphasis we can put on not smoking is only to the good. I walk around, I see teenagers smoking, and everybody who puts one of those things in his mouth is subjecting themselves to terrible, terrible harm. Anything that this country can do is okay with me.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. New York State's new budget includes $500 million in clean water infrastructure. Environmentalists say that while they appreciate the allocation, it's just a dent in the state's water infrastructure needs. State officials say it builds on New York's historic $2.5 billion investment. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
The $500 million in funding for clean water projects includes repairing and upgrading water infrastructure, protecting drinking water at its source, and responding to sources of toxic contamination such as PFAS and toxic algal outbreaks. Dan Shapley is Water Quality Program Director for Riverkeeper.
$500 million is really a good amount, and it's an important investment to see on an annual basis. The important thing that we know from talking with communities is that they need to know that this is assured year after year after year after year, because the projects that we're talking about are complicated, they're expensive, and if a community commits to planning to upgrade its infrastructure right now, it's going to take a couple of years before it gets to the point where it can even seek that grant funding.
Shapley called it a little disappointing that the full doubling wasn't in the budget, but considers the funding the first $500 million installment of Governor Andrew Cuomo's $2.5 billion pledged for clean water projects.
we're going to have to go back in future years and make sure that the annual spending keeps up and doesn't get sacrificed to other priorities in future years.
Erica Ringwald is spokeswoman for the State Department of Environmental Conservation.
No state in the nation is as focused as New York on putting people to work upgrading our water infrastructure and providing communities with clean water.
So this $500 million, while it's great, we just felt like there could be more up front. We were asking for $5 billion over 5 years to address that need.
That's Maureen Cunningham. She's Senior Director for Environmental Advocates of New York.
In 2008, the state came out with a figure for how much it would take to fix our wastewater and drinking water infrastructure, and that was $80 billion over 20 years, which actually translates to $4 billion a year. And so while we appreciate the funding in the budget, the $500 million that was put in the budget, we just don't feel like it's enough. It's basically a drop in the bucket of what is needed to replace and repair the wastewater and drinking water infrastructure in New York.
Again, the DEC's Ringwald.
Through Governor Cuomo's leadership, the additional $500 million dedicated in this budget builds on the historic ongoing investments through the $2.5 billion Clean Water Infrastructure Act of 2017. These investments will continue to leverage federal funding and low-cost Environmental Facilities Corporation loans to municipalities, ensuring our communities are advancing critical projects. This new funding is the next installment in the governor's commitment to provide another $2.5 billion for water funding, for a $5 billion total, and is just one part of our comprehensive work across the state to protect water quality.
Shapley points to areas in the state with pressing needs.
If you look at Riverkeeper's water quality testing data, we see a really clear patterns around the Capital District continuing to need investments to address combined sewer overflows there, Utica, Newburgh, and other areas where those combined sewer overflows really cause a particular problem. We also see a much more generalized problem with water quality that follows rain in many, many more places.
Cunningham says there is a long line of municipalities statewide awaiting funding.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
The new state budget also includes a proposal to close 2 or 3 prison facilities. That idea is not sitting well in New York's North Country, which has seen facilities shuttered in the past. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The New York Division of the Budget estimates the closure of 2 or 3 prisons could save the state nearly $35 million. Governor Andrew Cuomo, appearing with WAMC's Alan Chartok on the roundtable Monday, says the inmate population is dropping and 1,200 beds are no longer needed.
1,200 beds could be 2 big facilities, 3 smaller facilities. That's why the 2 or 3. And we're going to do an analysis. Not needing prisons is a good thing, by the way. Not locking up people in jail cells is a good thing. Alternative to incarcerations is a good thing.
In a statement March 29th, New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolent Association President Michael Powers said, quote, double bunking has artificially created open beds, and open beds gives the administration false justification, unquote. The proposed prison closures are of concern in the North Country. In 2009, the state closed Camp Gabriel's. That was followed in 2011 with the shuttering of the Lion Mountain Correctional Facility. 115th District Assemblyman D. Billy Jones is from Chateauguay, where the Chateauguay Correctional Facility was closed by the state in 2014. A former corrections officer, the Democrat says he will fight to ensure no more facilities in his district close.
I know from my experience, we still have facilities that are double bunked all over the state, and that creates an unsafe situation. We should get rid of double bunking, and I do have a bill in, actually, to get rid of that.
Beyond the debate over inmate population, Governor Cuomo is refocusing the debate over the economic repercussions of closing prison facilities.
I know there are economic engines in upstate New York, but God help us if we have to get to the pearly gates and say to God, I created jobs in upstate New York by locking up people who didn't need to be locked up.
But Jones believes it's unfair for the state to abandon communities that accepted the prisons decades ago.
Back in the 80s and early 90s, the North Country took these facilities in with open arms. Now, I'm not going to argue that prisons are quote-unquote good economic drivers, but the people that work in these facilities contribute to the economy in the North Country, and now that people depend on these jobs, to take them away from them, I just feel is unfair.
Franklin County Legislature Chair Don Debut says the prisons offer the best paying jobs in the area and questions the governor for not knowing or perhaps revealing which facilities will be closed.
It seems like if there was a real need for certain prisons to be targeted, you wouldn't even have to think about it. You'd know which ones they were.
Prisons that remain open in the North Country include Bear Hill, Upstate Correctional, and Franklin Correctional in Franklin County, Adirondack Correctional and Moriah Shock Incarceration in Essex County, and Altona and Clinton Correctional in Clinton County. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Attorney General Letitia James has filed what the Democrats call the country's most extensive lawsuit against pharmaceutical manufacturers and distributors for their alleged role in the opioid epidemic. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
The lawsuit filed by James targets six prescription opioid manufacturers, notably Purdue Pharma and its affiliates, along with distributors Cardinal Health, the AmerisourceBergen Drug Corporation, the McKesson Corporation, and the Rochester Drug Cooperative. James alleges the companies, through false marketing and negligence, contributed to the creation of the opioid epidemic in New York.
When I ran for Attorney General, I made a commitment to New Yorkers that I would tackle the crisis during my campaign all across the state. I've held in my arms too many mothers, too many fathers, too many individuals who told me stories about how their children died and how they died because of this epidemic that could have been prevented.
The suit also targets the Sackler family, who own Purdue Pharma. James says the company is valued at several billion dollars. The first-term attorney general says the family purposely shifted Purdue's opioid profits into trusts and offshore accounts to avoid recovery by law enforcement in the now several lawsuits it is facing.
And so for the first time, our lawsuit includes fraudulent conveyance claims against Purdue and the Sackler family.
The lawsuit also sets forth what James calls, quote, an extensive set of facts, end quote, alleging that the distributors named failed to detect and report the diversion of opioids into, quote, unauthorized hands, end quote. Under the New York Controlled Substance Act, distributors are required to monitor and report red flags, such as suspiciously high prescription orders, orders paid in cash, and orders written by illegal prescribers. But James says defendants like Cardinal Health actually incentivize sales representatives to push as much product to pharmacies as possible.
One particular pharmacy in Suffolk County had the highest volume of opioid orders in Suffolk County. And in fact, Cardinal reported the suspicious orders to the DEA and the Department of Health. They reported an average of 85 suspicious orders per year for 5 years. Yet, despite reporting the suspicious orders, Cardinal continued to fill the orders, and some as recent as 2018.
Cardinal Health is the leading distributor of opioids in the state at 780 million OxyContin pills since 2010, according to the AG's office. The State Department of Health says the rate of opioid overdose deaths in New York almost tripled between 2010 and 2016. According to James, 9 people die of an opioid overdose in the state every day. Gary Buchan is executive director of Bridge Back to Life Center, an addiction treatment center. He says the center spends more time comforting families of lost loved ones than it does treating addicts.
We have successfully treated the scholar athlete, the stay-at-home parent, the high-level executive, the sports star, the TV personality, those who wear blue collars and those who wear white collars, and even those in the medical profession themselves that have fallen victim to prescription opioid addiction.
The lawsuit says New York has spent hundreds of millions of dollars treating opioid addiction and paying for false prescriptions through its Medicaid, workers' compensation, and employee health plans. In addition to reform, James says the suit seeks funding for addiction prevention and treatment programs and billions of dollars in penalties.
If you do not get into compliance with the law, we have outlined in myriad ways in this lawsuit that we will not allow you to continue selling controlled substances in New York. Full stop. Period.
New York isn't the first state to hold companies' feet to the fire. On March 26, Vermont Attorney General T.J. Donovan filed a lawsuit against Cardinal Health and the McKesson Corporation following a September lawsuit against Purdue Pharma. Purdue settled a similar case in Oklahoma for $270 million the same day. Purdue says New York is seeking to publicly vilify the company and the Sacklers with ill-supported claims about a drug that accounts for under 2% of all opioid prescriptions. The Sackler family say they have always acted properly. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1914. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.